1 Samuel chapter 23, I want to begin this morning before we get into our text down in verse 16 to lay the background of this message. I want to preach to you this morning. It's the title is The Ministry of Friendship. But what I want to do this morning is point our hearts and our minds to the friend that sticks closer than a brother. Some of you this morning need to experience, not just know of this friend. You know him. You are in a relationship with Jesus Christ. But you know and are and have need to experience him in the reality of your life, where you are. In this story, in this little snippet from the life of David, just a short time in his life, David is at a very low point. David has been through much. If you were to back up into the previous chapter, you have the story of where David had previously come to the city of the priests, and he had sought help. He said, I'm getting ready to go on this mission. And he wasn't entirely open and honest with the priest. And the priest said, well, you need a weapon. Here's the sword of Goliath. And David said, give me that. There's none like that. And here's a young boy that could barely carry the weapons of Saul, but now is able to use the weapon of Goliath. And he said, here's some of the showbread. And he helps David and sends him on his way, little knowing that Saul is angry with David. And so when Saul gets there, he's angry with the priest, and he said, why did you help David? And the priest said, he's your most loyal subject. Why wouldn't I help David? He's the leader in your army. He's your son-in-law. He's close to you. He's been your friend. He is loyal to you. And of course, this makes Saul angry, and he orders his soldiers to kill all the priests in this entire city. His soldiers have a fear of God, and they say, no, we're not touching the priest. We know better than that. And so he has a fellow there in his employ by the name of Doeg. He's an Edomite. He's not of the nation of Israel. He has no fear of God. He says, give me the job. And so he single-handedly wipes out an entire city. One young priest flees to David, and he tells David the story, and David said, I knew when I saw Doeg there, I should have known something was going to happen. Doeg saw me in that place. And he says, I am responsible for the death of your family and your city. David takes on him the responsibility. Boy, there's few things in this life that are heavier on our shoulders than our responsibility for others. And whether we're responsible or not, David technically wasn't responsible for their deaths. He takes this burden on his shoulders. He's concerned and he cares about them. And he says, I'm at fault here. He hears about a city that's being attacked by the Philistines. And the practice of the Philistines was to let the Israelites grow their crops until they reached their full crop and time for harvest. And then the Philistines would swoop in and attack and take all the harvest. They'd let the Israelites do all the work. They'd let the Israelites grow the tomatoes all summer, and then they'd get the tomato sandwiches. They'd come in and take all the goods. And so they're coming in and attacking this city, and David hears about it, and he inquires of the Lord, should I go up? And he goes up, and he fights, and he risks his life and the life of the men that he leads and their families. He risks them to save the lives of this city. He saves their crops, he saves their herds, and he saves their lives. And after it's all over with, Saul hears that he's there. Saul's searching for David. And Saul prepares to come up against this to the city. And so David again inquires of the Lord, and he says, Lord, will Saul come up? Yes, David, he will come up. Will the men of this city turn me over to him? Yes, they will. You've got to be kidding me. I mean, in spite of all that we've done, we've just risked our lives to save this bunch and their wealth and their herds and their food. And this is the thanks we get. They're going to turn me over to Saul. And so David is betrayed by those that he's defended. David is at a very low point in his life. And I want you to look in verse 13. David and his men, which were about 600, arose and departed out of Keilah and went whithersoever they could go. They scatter wherever they can go. And it was told Saul that David was escaped. And he doesn't go up. And David, look at verse 14. David abode in the wilderness in strongholds, and he remained in a mountain in the wilderness. Saul sought him every day, but God kept him out of Saul's hand. This is not David having a glorified camp out with his friends and his men. This is David living in the wilderness. Occasionally we like to watch the show Alone, and if you've ever seen Alone, they take people and they drop them out in the middle of the wilderness, and they have to survive on their own. They have to find their own food, and they have to build their own shelter, and they have to do all these things. And sometimes we have this idea that David and his soldiers were sort of like Robin Hood and his merry men, standing around quaffing ale and eating a turkey leg. I mean, that was sort of the idea. That's not what they're doing. You watch the people on that show, and you'll see them at the beginning of the show. Man, they look nice and healthy. And you see them at the end, and they look old and haggard, and they look like they've been through the ringer. And they have. And that's where David is. David is living in the wilderness, and every day he's on the run from Saul, not knowing who's going to be the one to turn him in. David is at a low point in his life. It's a reminder that David, who was a man after God's own heart, David, who was a great warrior, David, who was a great follower of God, was desperately in need of a friend. He was desperately in need of encouragement. There's this false idea that if we are strong enough in our faith, that we'll never have weak moments. That if we are strong enough Christians, that if we're praying enough, if we're reading the Word of God enough, if we're close enough to God, we'll never experience these kind of things. And yet there are times when we hit low points, and we need a friend to come to where we are. I want you to see some truths from what David's friend Jonathan does in this passage. But this passage does not point us to Jonathan. This passage ultimately points us to Jesus. The Scriptures commands about friendship, but he always uses Jesus as the example. A man that has friends must show himself friendly. A principle about friendship. But he goes on to say, and there is a friend that sticks closer than a brother. Aren't you glad for Jesus, who is our friend? Jesus, what a friend of sinners. Jesus, lover of my soul. Friends may fail me, foes assail me. He, my Savior, keeps me whole. That's our friend that we have. What does true friendship look like? Well, true friendship is others focused, and I want you to see what Jonathan does in this one simple verse, in verse 16. And Jonathan's son, Jonathan, Saul's son, arose and went to David into the wood and strengthened his hand in God. And he said unto him, fear not, for the hand of Saul my father shall not find thee, and thou shalt be king over Israel, and I shall be next unto thee, and that also Saul my father knows. I want you to see three quick things just about true friendship in the life of Jonathan, and then I want to make application. Because Jonathan's not who's important. It's Jesus who's important. But true friendship, first of all, initiates. We see it in two little words there that are somewhat divided in the first sentence. Jonathan arose. Jonathan arose. It takes action on our part. There's a lot of people who sit around and we're going to, somebody's got to do something. It's the old story about four people. You remember this story? There's four people named Everybody, Somebody, Anybody, and Nobody. Any of y'all heard that story before? Well, you're about to, so hang on. There was an important job to be done, and everybody was sure that somebody would do it. Anybody could have done it, but nobody did it. Somebody got angry about it because it was everybody's job. Everybody thought anybody could do it, but nobody realized that everybody wouldn't do it, so nobody did it. It ended up that everybody blamed somebody when nobody did what anybody could have done. Now, some of y'all are going to be confused for the rest of the service. I can see some of your wheels turning. Some of you I lost on the fourth body. The point is that it's easy for us to sit back and think, oh, somebody else is going to do that. Somebody else is going to initiate. Somebody else is going to reach out. Someone that walks in the door and we see someone that's new or a first-time guest and we say, well, the greeters will do that, and I'm thankful for every one of you that serve as a greeter in our church, and you welcome people to our church every Sunday, and you are the first face that they see. God help us, but that's the case. But we're grateful that you serve in that ministry. And it's easy to say, well, the greeters are going to reach out and initiate that and be that friend and welcome. And the pastors will do that and others will do that. And if you think, well, if somebody will do it, then it ends up maybe nobody does it. And so everybody needs to do it. We see someone who needs comfort and needs encouragement. Friendship is others focused. Saul was thinking about who can help me, who can do for me. Jonathan's heart was, who needs a friend? And he saw his friend David, and he says, here's someone that needs encouragement. He initiated. We initiate. We do to others what we would expect. A man that has friends must show himself friendly, as you would that others would do to you. Do you even so to them, Luke 6:31. We take the gospel. Why do we involve ourselves in missions? Why do we engage in mission trips? Why do we send the gospel and give money so that others may go? Why do we invest in these things? We do this. We extend grace because we are initiating. We are called to initiate because that's what God did. God is the one who initiated friendship with us. Herein is love. Not that we loved God, but that He first loved us and gave His Son to be the provided sacrifice, the propitiation for our sin. And so Jonathan initiates. True friendship is that initiates. And then I want you to notice the second phrase in this verse, and that is that true friendship involves. And he arose, and look at this, he went to David. He went to where he is. I'm reminded of the verse in 2 Timothy chapter 1, verse 17, where Paul is speaking about the man Onesiphorus. He says, when he came to Rome, Paul is in prison, and Onesiphorus comes to where he is, and he finds him. He comes to Paul in prison. No shame, no embarrassment. He comes to where he is. And here, Jonathan comes to David. He comes and he puts himself in a position. Here is David, who is a fugitive from the law, at risk of his life. And Jonathan goes to where he is. I had an older friend one time years ago told me, aren't you glad you can have friends in different generations? I'm glad that all my friends are not my age. But I have friends that are older. And he said, when I was young, he said, I had tried to go, and sometimes I would go and encourage people. But he said, in the moment when I was at my lowest, someone came to me, and he said, they didn't say anything. They didn't do anything except just be present. They came to where I was. Sometimes it may mean getting our hands dirty. Sometimes it may mean doing something that's uncomfortable. Sometimes it may mean being a little awkward. But Jonathan came to where he is. This is why we engage our community. This is why we want to reach out. This is why our core ministry and Kid Life soccer and art and our gospel clubs in schools and all the things that we do. We want to engage. We want to involve ourselves with those around us with the message of the gospel. It's not just about being friendly with someone. It's about extending the greatest friendship possible, the friendship with Jesus Christ. We engage not only in that, but in our nation and then around the world. Why do we give to missions? Why do we give to our Chest of Joash offering? Why do we invest in missionaries that go to other places and mission trips? Why? Because we want to go and involve ourselves there. And for some, it's just going across the street or going to a neighbor's house or to our school or our place of work. But true friendship involves. But then notice, thirdly, true friendship imparts. David receives Jonathan. Jonathan comes. And notice what Jonathan does. It's every phrase that he says ministers to David. He says, first of all, I want you to have some courage, David. First of all, in verse 16, his actions, he strengthened his hand in God. His very presence strengthened David's hand in God. And then by his words, he said unto him, fear not. Notice the spiritual nature of this courage. Friendship is about the needs of others, but it is wise to surround yourself with friends who are going to speak wisdom and truth to you in the moment that you need it the most. Friends sometimes are needed to encourage. Have you ever been low and you've had a friend that came alongside of you, and maybe by their presence or their actions or their words, it encouraged you and it kept you going? Sometimes Sometimes a friend has to exhort. Sometimes a friend is the best one to come alongside of us and speak some hard truth to us and say, I love you. This is the truth. This is what needs to change. This is where you're wrong. As iron sharpens iron, so the face of a man, the countenance of a man sharpens that of his friend. We sometimes think of that as loving, kind fellowship. But if you've ever sharpened something, boy, there can be sparks sometimes. But it's necessary. And friends, we need good, godly friends to edify us, to build us up in the faith, not to build our emotions or our ego up or to stroke our pride. We need friends because God has designed us that community and friendship is a central key part of our spiritual maturity and our growth. And so this is the kind of friend that Jonathan is. Jonathan is not there just to make David feel better. Jonathan is there to strengthen his hand in God. Everything he says to him, he gives him confidence in verse 17. Fear not, for the hand of Saul, my father, shall not find thee. God's not going to... Jonathan's confidence is in God. He knows that God's the one. The previous verse said it was God that kept Saul from finding him. He gives him confirmation. You will be king over Israel. What God has promised, God will do. How many times have you needed a friend to come along and remind you of the promises of God? Maybe it's in a church service. Maybe it was the choir singing this morning and reminding you of the promises of God. Maybe it's the scriptures. Maybe it's a word of encouragement, but it's a reminder. That's why it's important, the friends we have around us, that they come alongside of us and they remind us of who God is and they remind us of what He can do and they can remind us of what He has said He will do. And what God says He will do, He will do. We can trust in that. He says, David, you're going to be king. But notice Jonathan's commitment to David and also his contentment with God's plan. I shall be next unto thee. Jonathan, by rights, should be the next king. And yet he says to David, David, I'm not going to be king. You're going to be king, and I'm going to be your biggest supporter. I'm going to be right there beside of you, not waiting to see if something happens to you so I can take the crown, but I'm going to be right there to help you and encourage you. And just like I'm doing now, seems he's saying, I'm going to be there to encourage you and help you. Jonathan is content, and he wants David to know his commitment. God designed us to need friends. That's why I'm so blessed by our Sunday school classes, our small groups. Why? Because it's more than just getting together and talking about the things of God. That's invaluable. But it is a building of friendships and community, serving together. Those of you, we talk about serving for Judgment House. Some of you who have served together, you know what a bond happens when you serve alongside of someone. You go on a mission trip and you serve right alongside of them with Family Palooza. And if you've served on the Patriotic Explosion or you've gone out and you've shared the gospel, that serving together builds a strength and a bond. And God brings us together. Why? Because that's a part of His growing us into Christ-likeness. What does this point us to? This points us to the glory of Christ. Points us to the gospel. This example, this model of Jonathan points us to Jesus Christ. It points us to the message of the gospel that tells us that Jesus did these exact things. What did Jesus do? Jesus initiated. Jesus is the one who came to where we are. Jesus is the one who reached out to us. We did not love God first. We were His enemies, but He first loved us. He initiated. God doesn't need our love. God designed us to love Him, but God is a holy, perfect God who doesn't need anything. And yet He allows us to love Him and calls us into this relationship with Him. He initiates. And He involved Himself. He came to this earth, took on flesh, and experienced all points of temptation and all points of weakness like we are, yet without sin. He experienced that and He put Himself where we are. He came to where we are so that we could go to where He is. And He imparted, He has given to us His grace and His mercy. And He has given to us, He will give to us His righteousness. this morning, I don't know, there very likely is someone here that has never experienced the friendship of Jesus Christ. Now, he's more than just a good buddy to hang out with. We're talking about a friend who loves you far more than you can ever imagine. A friend who loves you so much. Greater love hath no man than this, than a man lay down his life for his friend. And that's what Jesus Christ did. It's what Jesus did for you. If you've never placed your trust in him, you may be a member of a church. You may have been baptized. You may have done a lot of good works. But if you've never placed your faith in Jesus, for by grace are you saved through faith, then you could experience that friendship of Jesus. He did what Jonathan did. And I want you to know this morning, if you have, many of you have, where you are right now, there's not a friend like the lowly Jesus. No, not one. And wherever you are, whatever you're going through, he will come to where you are and he will walk with you through it. I heard a story years ago that I think sums up this passage so well. A preacher that I heard preaching had been speaking in services out in the Midwest. He said before one of the revival services, during the revival week, he was invited by one of the families in the church to come out to their house and have supper before church. And so he said, we went out. He said, we were all dressed in our church clothes, and the man and his wife and his young adult son, around college, high school age son. And there were some other family members there, and he said, we had a really nice dinner. We had some fellowship together. And he said, after the meal, he said, we had a little time before church, and he said, the man said, Pastor, I'd like for you to come out in the backyard. My son and I train hunting dogs, and we'd like for you to see some of our dogs. We'd like for you to see what they can do. And so he said, sure, I'd love to do that. So he went out in the backyard, and he said they released some of the dogs from the kennel and let them out, and they started running around the yard. And he said, it was amazing. He said the dogs would take off running, and the man would call out a command, or the son would call out a command, and the dog would just turn and come back. And whatever they commanded, whatever they would do. And he said the son had a dog that he had raised from a pup. And he said he had trained this dog and he had prepared this dog and raised it. And he said it was a fine hunting dog. And he said that dog was running. He said it was the best of the lot. And he said the dog took off running down the yard. He said it was a long yard and behind the house. And he said it took off running down the yard. And he called a command and the dog wheeled to turn around and come back. But he said just as he wheeled and turned around, that dog just disappeared. Somebody had been working on the septic tank in the backyard, and they had left the cover off of the septic tank. And when that dog turned to come back, that dog dropped right down into that septic tank. Now, I don't have to describe that to y'all. Y'all know exactly what that... Now, I'm going to be honest. I'm fine with pets and dogs and cats and gerbils and whatever kind of pets you want to have. But if it had been me, it would have been, bye-bye, puppy. I can raise another one. But you know exactly what that young man did. In his clothes, in his dress clothes for church, they put a ladder down in that hole, and he went down into that mess that was down in that pit. That dog was floundering around, and he was splashing stuff everywhere, and the young man went to where that dog was, and he wrapped his arms around that dog. And he carried him up that ladder to clean him up. I'm glad for the day that when I was at my lowest and I was in the muck and the mire of sin, I'm glad that Jesus Christ, my Savior, came to where I was and he took me up in his arms and he lifted me up and he took me up to where I needed to be and he cleansed me and washed me and he made me whole. And now I'm not just a pet. I'm not just a hunting dog. I'm a part of his family. That's the friendship. It doesn't matter where you are, if what you've done, Jesus will come to where you are because he loves you. There's not a friend like the lowly Jesus. No, not one. No, not one. Will you bow with me for prayer this morning? Maybe this morning Maybe you've been hoping for a friend, and maybe Jesus is the friend that you need most this morning. Maybe you need to come and get in this altar and just get up close to your friend. Call out to him. Maybe this morning there's somebody in your life that God's placed in your heart that needs a friend, that needs encouragement, and you're the one to do it. You're the Jonathan to come along and model Jesus to them. Maybe this morning you need the love of the Savior. Aren't you glad that he loves us, that he comes to where we are? Jesus will come to where you are and take you where you need to be. As God speaks to our hearts this morning, let's respond in our invitation. Father, speak to us, I pray. Help us to be obedient.